of his material. I put it right down at the bottom. Yeah. There.
Wow.
So I begin
okay.
to zoom in on that.
Bob. Jeez.
You can start the bottom.
That's a diagram.
That's a lot of. It's right. This happened on a bag, or do you have to manually?
Yeah, this is what we did.
Right, close it up.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's what we did in the last 3 hours.
There you go. Some strings. Okay. Maybe a little bit.
This is
10 years old.
So it's put based on Will Durant's work.
Will Durant's, and also to some extent Charles Spencer's work.
Do you want to just go down?
Yeah, if you can see, if you get back to zoom out a bit.
Let me see, like the zoom right here.
No, the plus
right here.
Hit
the minus.
You want me to
hit
zoom
minus.
Out?
Yeah. Keep going. Let's see.
Okay.
So
let me see if I can get the hand.
Oh, yeah.
The hand tools. Like
around here. So the colors are the disciplines.
Right. So we have general systems, cybernetics, physical sciences, mathematics, computers and informatics, biology and medicine, symbolic systems, social systems, ecology, philosophy, systems analysis, and engineering.
World news.
And time.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
So this is at the top here.
We can relate to that.
So time's going from Confucius at the bottom.
Just child's play what we were doing.
Confucius at the bottom.
Confucius, Plato, Socrates.
I don't see my
here
book.
Here you have general systems. this is the largest node here is general systems,
totally
and
no.
This is all. All
totally
of
no.
These are actual lines of influence. That if this person cited that person, or this person was influenced. So all of these general systems influences everything up here, and then you have here's Churchman.
There's Churchman.
There's Acuff
right
above.
Right. Second order cybernetics. System cybernetics, Ashby.
Vickers on the left, social cybernetics.
There's
so
the red ones.
Folding right below.
The red
right
are.
Wow,
let's bring up the keys so we can remember what the colors are.
Colors and the thickness of the folding.
Those are the strength of the influence, I think. That he was actually doing that.
How many citations something has?
Possible. So the purple are the engineering, so that would be a particular interest, but then of course the systems, cybernetics and things like that are also very influential. Computer sciences and engineering, informatics, and coding schema, Shannon, Simon.
Super strings.
So do you draw any general conclusions from the overall?
Yeah, it's a mess. That's what she got.
Yeah.
Spread of coverage and linkage of all.
So
operations research.
So the red is cybernetics.
Right.
The red is cybernetics.
Cybernetics.
Janet, which one? Is this Troncalli's or is it?
No, this
J's.
He was citing it. But this was done by
Forest.
IIGSS, whatever
yes.
that is.
Yeah.
And by Dr. someone or other.
International Institute for General Systems Studies.
Right. And for some reason, it's not available on the web anymore. We wrote to them when we first found it 10 or 15 years ago or whatever. Maybe that's about 10 years ago.
It's 2020.
Probably too many deaths were associated
and
with it.
And we said, we could buy a poster of this. And they said, gee, we're not set up for that. But they didn't. I thought they had a great opportunity to sell posters of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it's not available on the web anymore.
So the light blue here is systems analysis.
Oh,
okay. The dark blue is math.
That's RAND and stuff. Mm-hmm.
See, there's Andy Sage, Chestnut,
yeah.
Arthur Hall.
Arthur Hall. So they put them under system analysis.
And then John Warfield up there.
Right, the green over here is biology and
Peter
medicine.
Peter Senge. So what is red again?
Red is cybernetics.
I'm surprised they put Peter Senge under cybernetics. But it's
what
called
says?
Management cybernetics,
right.
I think.
Just
does that mean
Jeff,
like
Jeffrey Lynn, that was him, was Janet.
So this only goes.
Right, Jeffrey Lynn.
This only goes 10 years.
Oh,
I
no,
mean,
no,
it's
no,
10
it's
years old.
No,
right?
no, no.
right.
Yeah, so it's 10 years old.
So it wouldn't have any newer stuff, not that we would need anything else to put on it.
Keep it busy for a while.
I know. For another 10 years. Right?
Is there anything
black?
Yeah, right. This gets to.
So the black of the physical sciences is up here.
So Ralph Abraham, complex dynamical systems. Modern theoretical physics, and here's John Kinneman.
I'm off the chart.
That's off the chart over in left.
Oh, you should wrap around.
That's the name. Yeah.
The magenta, up there is computers and informatics.
And then Lily Kaufman, who's very involved in the American Society for Cybernetics, a mathematician.
So our job is to combine all this.
To appreciate it.
And a lot of these people actually did integrative work. A lot of these are unified systems. So it's just that they didn't take off because they weren't placed in a position to evolve and be flexible.
Right. So it's to appreciate it, and maybe, if we can, get to the stage of maybe tentatively saying what the limitations of this or that one were, and learn from those lessons.
So here we're at the early part in time. So you have Zoroaster, Anaxagoras, Democritus, Homer.
So is there some ordering to this spatial?
Yeah, that's the important question.
Time is bottom to top.
Okay. And left to the right is
there,
discipline?
Somewhat. They do aggregate somewhat.
Kind of go soft to hard?
Semiotics, biology, I think that's...
Yeah.
Semiotics, psychology, biology.
What occurs to me is...
Hey, there's a language stuff.
Janet, this was done in the 1980s. Because we had it at San Jose State.
Oh.
Well, this is a draft.
The most recent update. Okay, so he added the stuff on.
Yeah, draft update. Draft update, May 2001.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you put
Eric
Schwartz?
Schwartz. I don't know if we should have, but
his name is Dr. Eric Schwartz.
Yes.
Didn't they print
that for Sonoma State?
Yes. Len printed it.
Says it there.
It's in my PhD.
The changes here,
Len is in there, right?
It says extended in 98 to include items from Wilder Ansbach, and then elaborated in 2001 from many sources for the IIGSS. So it's currently a research project for them.
So Stuart Umpleby is in there. He's going to be in Austria. He's social cybernetics, management cybernetics. Len is in there. Who else?
But he has the management systems, right? So a lot of
he's still talking about.
Okay, so we want to start presenting now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So we have a new appreciation. Yes,
yeah.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so shall we start, or do you guys need to catch up, or
who goes first?
So who wants to speak for us?
You do.
Okay. We're the group X.
Look at
you. So we kind of figured out there's four categories of questions. Why would we want a language as common? If we had one, what would we do with it? How do we get to a common language? And how do we maintain it? Mm-hmm. And why would we want it? How would we define success? And what's the cost of being common? What's the cost of not being common? What's the cost of if you had a common, what's the cost of having it? And what are the benefits? And we started to say, does it reduce entropy? Who are the beneficiaries?
Is it really easier if you reuse existing elements? Is integration easier? System engineering only does about five things, according to Jack Ring. And one of them being languaging the project, so at least he claims that's a key thing we do. So that's kind of part of the first question. Any thoughts from the other group?
We'll tell you our thoughts when we have our presentation.
Wow.
Cool.
We should have let them go first.
So
didn't David say we were supposed to generate a little controversy?
A little tension?
So later on, you'll see us talk about the need for requisite variety in the common language. So that gets into maybe some ambiguity is good. So you may not want to reduce ambiguity to zero. You want some looseness. So there's a question of how when you say common, how tight or loose will that be? What attributes of the language are common? Is it just the labels we use? Is it the grammar? Is it the underlying concepts? Or what about the language is common?
Mm-hmm. But it's important to distinguish between generality and ambiguity. Generality is good. Ambiguity is
okay. Yeah.
Languaging the project, does that refer to developing a specific language for that project, given that we have lots of semantic variation in usage of terms and things like that?
Well, part of it is bringing in the notion of what different stakeholders need, but the stakeholder community uses a different language, but on the project, we need to bring it to a common language so we can actually work together to come to the same end result. Because if on a project they don't have language commonality, then you deliver something that's
right.
Like, oh, why did you deliver that? That's not what I meant when I said. Because we got to specify very particularly what it is we're expecting to deliver.
That's a dimension we didn't actually cover, but it dovetails well into our group's discussion because if you develop a specific language that for a project, that can work because we can't get one for everything.
Trust was.
Okay. So question two. If we had it, assuming you determine that it's beneficial to have benefit exceed the cost, if we had it, what would we do with it? Who would use it? It's into your question. Is it only used within a project? Mm-hmm. Is it kind of done before or after the project? Or is it used, what's it used for? Is it used maybe in an investigative mode to find out, you know, maybe it's just used for investigation as a way to examine successes and failures? You know, so who knows? Who's going to use it? What are they like? I don't remember what that meant.
Well, what are the characteristics of the users?
Okay. So, for each user, what are they like? What is it that they need from the language? So, there may be a belief that having one common language will improve something. So, but it may help just reduce waste of time arguing about meaning words. That's kind of an assertion. There's another assumption there. Possible uses, we started listing some examples of cases where there is a language for one particular aspect of system engineering, that's for language for communicating between tools. So we don't want just the language that people use. We also want what the language that the tools use and the methods use. So we want to make sure it's not just the people language.
Or just the tool language.
Or just the tool language. Because those guys, obviously, focusing just on tool interchange, really just tool interchange language, not even the language the tool themselves use, but just the interface between them. So then we had some sub-pages here that kind of elaborate a little bit. What's the language trying to describe? Is it trying to describe the systems or the process by which systems get realized? What's it describing? That's the same question here. Okay, so the notion that it's not just the product systems, there's process systems, service systems. So we don't want to limit to the product system. process versus structure. How do patterns come into play here? Other disciplines seem to have handbooks that establish common language for them. And system engineering handbooks tend to talk about what do you do to do system engineering, whereas EE handbook doesn't talk about how you do electrical engineering. It just talks about, you know, this is what you do with a resistor to make a filter device. So it's kind of a, their language is about the things that they're crafting, where system engineering handbooks are not talking about the things we're crafting, but how do you go about doing your stuff. So do we need another sort of handbook that describes like the other disciplines? Not sure. This kind of, and can we adopt some of the language of the disciplines that they're using, pull it into the systems domain? So maybe software and EE and chemical engineering have some language we can just pull in. Is it enough to do a language, or do we need an ontology? And I can't remember why this was here.
Because it's on the flip chart behind you.
Yeah. I don't know why they're on this page.
Because it climbs the second bullet. That somehow we've got to hear it.
Well, we started talking about language. And is language just the words we use? And we put this up here because language is really the data layer.
Yeah.
And even when you string words together in a sentence, you're trying to have a meaningful sentence, which is, you have to have not just a random string of words, but it's not just the words, but also how they're strung together. So this is the words, and here's the grammar. And this is maybe the linguistic styles you use. And is it a poem or is it prose?
Well, this was discussed in the context of the boundary between language and ontology, I think. You know, where does language stop?
Yeah, and there's also the language. There's language at all levels. It's not just, and it's also the language of observations. Because if you can't, sometimes you can't see things because you don't have a language for seeing. Mm-hmm. Who said yesterday about the Indians didn't see the Europeans coming because they had no notion that they
what a ship was, right?
That they didn't have no notion what a ship was, so they didn't see it. It was invisible until they actually got to shore, and then they saw. In fact, they thought these were beings, with the upper half of a human and the bottom half had four legs, because they saw somebody riding on a horse.
Right.
And that was just a new creature for them. And until the guy got off the horse, they didn't realize it was two creatures.
Interesting.
So there's language at any layer, and it's something about the systems. You gotta. Kind of language, I guess the language action, you know, gets you up to
ontologies and things.
You need to get to what you know. And praxis versus practice. So we pulled in the Wikipedia definition of practice to point out that it's not just the practice, because there's three things: theory, lesson, skill, and four verbs: enact, practice, embody, and realize. And the practice is one of the four things, one of the four verbs. And then, so the praxis, what is the embodiment? You're embodying the theory, lesson, or skills, not just in the people, but also in the process, method, tools, and the right. It's like the AP233 issue. They're trying to get the language, the tools taught. Well, what about the language of our methods? So let's not just focus on the language of people, but these are the five things that are, I guess, the actors within the praxis. And there's theory applied to all five. There's lessons and skills, and we weren't even sure these are it could be limited to this. What about knowledge? Don't you want to embed the knowledge in tools? Or maybe lesson is knowledge, I don't know. But to me, there's more to knowledge than just lessons.
What was down to the right there?
This down here?
Yeah.
Well, they were talking about
Phronesis.
Okay.
And let me see, where did this come from? This is from the...
Well, is praxis, is it?
Yeah.
So there's praxis. Okay, and then there was a... Did we get to the lower paragraph?
Yeah,
remember?
Next page exactly. Down.
Okay. But it turns out, the Greeks...
The geeks.
The Greeks.
No, the Greeks.
The ancient geeks.
Jimmy the geeks.
Geeks. Geeks.
The original geeks.
Or Greek.
Now we know where they came from.
Yep. Somebody dropped the R. Yeah.
Well, it went into the model, I mean the theory. They borrowed it.
So the question came up about, praxis is in the context of, according to the Greeks, two other things, theoria and poiesis. So to really do that, you need to understand the upper level of how these things relate to practice. And we still focus on that, but you know, we have to understand the relationship. It's a situated model of this within that. And that we're, how does our theory relate to practice? We're gonna make sure we incorporate social cultural aspects. Okay. So let's say we did get the language embedded in these five elements. How does it get transmitted from generation to generation? Like people come and go, tools come and go. How does it, you know, let's say we do our modeling of the system in a particular tool. How do we transition that to the newer tool that came along this year? A new method comes along. How do we translate that to that all that stuff in the praxis so something doesn't get lost in this brand new tool or method? How does Charles Sanders Peirce come in and help us understand language? And there's two versions of semiotics, the Saussure and the Peirce version. And it's just a question, you know, is it related? Can it be helpful to understand what language is? Third category, how do we get to a common language? Maybe integrate what's already there instead of something new. Maybe it's not just SE, but other disciplines, since SE is supposed to be interdisciplinary, cross-disciplinary. Yeah. There have been several attempts to get a common language. What can we learn from that? So here's some examples of failures. And here's some, I guess we were saying these are successes.
Yeah,
but not everybody.
Partial
successes.
And partial failures and partial successes.
Yeah,
these are attempts
of
degrees of failure. And when, if it succeeded partially, where did it succeed and why, and where did it not succeed? And here's some examples of, you know, the lingua franca
English
in different domains. For many centuries, French was used for diplomacy. Latin, for many centuries, was all church services. And I guess I could have put English as the common language used by all airline pilots.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in commercial language, that English, to me, mm-hmm. strong commercial aspects because it's simplistic. German was the language of philosophers.
Yeah. And on and on, just other examples.
Yeah.
There's a story of the American Airlines flying across Europe, and they heard the German pilots on the radio talking German.
Oh.
And they chastised them and said, "No, you've got to speak English." And they said, "No, we don't. We're just talking among ourselves." "Yeah, but you lost the war."
Right.
It's the only reason English became the airline pilot is because of World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that forced it because the Allies had to come up with a common language. And
well, there's a long historical story. In 1848, all the nationalities of the Austro-Hungarian monarchy wanted to get rid of them and be independent. So they met, and the only common language they had was German.
No,
so
that's right.
It's something like a little historical note.
Right.
So.
Okay.
And the Russian nobility spoke German.
French.
Okay, so how do we get there? There have been some attempts to get there, not all successful.
do we have to rely on what's currently in practice, or how much heritage we have to pull in? And Eric Honor pulled up his chart, where he was really, he looked at all the SE process standards, six of them or something, and saw that all the standards use different language for the same process element. So that's an example of different labels in the process domain. Yep. Of course, people adapt that, tools adapt those, so they kind of permeates. So that was this, you know, we can extract from the existing standards, but they aren't even common. But maybe we can take the best of best or something. And there's various sources that we can harvest good ideas. The ontology work we'll see tomorrow. Workfield's generic theory of design, Herb Simon, Ackoff, R theory, Pierce's, and on the IESS there's a whole page on luminaries, many of which I guess each luminary has their own language, but some of them were integrated, where they tried to pull together into a kind of unified view. Then we started talking about what are the attributes of a common language? Well, it needs requisite variety, it needs parsimony, and it probably needs some other. So I guess the question is, what are the attributes of the common language that we need to make common?
Extensibility.
Okay.
That's a key word.
Relates to the ontology earlier as well.
Mm-hmm. So any other we can just... Okay, so how do we maintain it, which is our fourth and last category? How does it stay common, and what parts of it need to keep common, and what parts can be allowed to change? How can we make it flexible and evolving? What kind of governance to put in place to not necessarily control the evolution, but kind of manage it? So it's not. So there's a tension between being too tight and too loose. So where's the sweet spot? The framework for experience. Could you say more about that?
The cycle thing.
Yeah. Well, right. That's for the transmission between practitioners. That it's not just something that you can codify, and
The tacit knowledge
right,
question.
Right.
Right. Mm, yeah.
Okay.
And so it has to be. A framework for experience is a good idea for.
In a sense, isn't that verification that the knowledge was understood properly, as reflected in the behavior of the person who's using it by the master of the disciple?
Right. And I think I was thinking about like in the Kaizen, you know, the idea of seeing in context, that the learning should be in context, you know, so it not only should be face-to-face teaching, but it should be in a context of observing the intuition of the practitioner, you know, the transmission, anyway.
The master's context is the same as the student's. Mm-hmm. They will see it
right?
Might need to evolve.
Right. Yeah.
And thinking can't be the reflection of thinking.
So there's... So that some two aspects of the language are its structure and its content. So there may be some implication for those two dimensions. And we need a framework that will allow, promote, and facilitate these things, governance, ability to evolve, being robust, resilient, and
that was, what does moderating mean? It was moderating between the different schools of thought within
right.
the system science.
You'll never have complete agreement, but you want to sort of
so
a continual moderating.
So by moderation, you mean like adjudication?
Yeah.
What you mean is this, and what you mean is that.
Right.
And accepting them both for what they are.
But
okay.
But in a minimal way.
Yeah. Like when a new technology emerges and two different groups are using it, they
right.
come up with their own language,
right.
How then do you incorporate that into a common
right.
set? If it
right.
needs to be incorporated.
Okay. Something like that?
Yes.
Okay. And so, again, what are the desired features? Of course, this is driven by the other questions. And can somebody explain this?
that was a drawing that I was doing that Eric wanted to incorporate. The idea is that there would be a set of common system semantics, language, vocabulary, grammar structure, whatever. And then there's also, as you get closer to the realization of the system or the realization, you know, the greater the definition of the conceptual model, you've actually now got to get closer to being specific, and no longer can you allow for the generalization has to give way to the specific instances.
When you get down here.
Right, and that's when you domain and specialty engineering requires that you actually become more specific.
So I guess the question is, how deep do we need to go into these domains, and where do we, how do we make the connections? Is it a mapping table? Is that a this has this aliases and these different domains?
I don't know. I mean, that's got to be explored.
And then there were some other questions that, because of the way he stated the problem for the team, he said, what are the questions that should be addressed by the working group? And so a lot of these questions had to do with what should the working group as a whole, not should this conversation limited to language stuff.
Well, but also the possibility that by addressing this, this would be input to help form them.
Yeah, this could be kind of some of the possible uses of the common language could maybe help answer some of these questions.
And some of the concepts for the language.
And some of the concepts in there, yeah. How do we select? In other words, when you're tailoring SE for a project, how do you know what pieces to select, and what levels do you go to? How much do you let? How much does system engineering do versus letting the discipline handle it? So this is kind of a, when you're starting a project, and even the middle of a project, you know, how much of what do you do and when, and kind of how do you allocate the work among the participants?
So there's more to it. The problem really is we have this very classical one. First of all, requirements, a design, a specification design, implement. Yeah. And one of the keys to me to systems engineering is the way really you run through these four things. And I believe that every engineer has to know which head he owns at the moment. I'm now doing designing, specification, or testing perhaps. But you can do it in small pieces and iterate a lot, that would be agile. Yeah. You could do it in larger ones, that would be something like some of this system development methods and re-engineering all that. So okay. I think that's, it's not only the tailoring, but also the splitting up of the activities to how small a portion or so. That's also a key to that.
Okay.
And that's where most of the fights about methods really go. Because everybody agrees you have to tell first what you want, then how you want it, by general and specifically, and then do it. So nobody disagrees with that, except some of the people who wait for the divine inspiration and code immediately. But they usually are not very good. That's the other story. Yeah.
I think I have slightly, morphed vision of this. I don't see the black line between the disciplines and systems engineering. I see a language being developed that helps to propagate down into the disciplines systems language. That doesn't mean you obviate their language, it just propagates it down, because we are all are translating between languages all the time. And that's what we do. And the other is to propagate up from the discipline. Things learned about systems and disciplines into a more general. So to me, it's a little bit more of building, and this would be the first discipline we talked about that in our group that would have to do things like this. They have to create, like for instance, this language, and we had some other ideas too, that have to reach down in the disciplines and then take things from them. So that's what extensibility means in this context, not a line.
Okay, so I take that to mean it's not just the language that SEs talk, but the language helps us listen too.
Right.
Language is a two-way street. We need to listen to what the disciplines are telling us, what's possible and what's not. In addition to listening to stakeholders about translating from their problem domain into the engineering domain, but then down into the discipline. So it's a language outward, two-way, language downward, two-way.
Well,
and then talking to the managers is another.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think I'm at least, because I've had to play my whole career on both sides of the street. There are things in system language already that will make almost any discipline better. I didn't say everything, but there are some things. Mm-hmm. There are things in the language developed around disciplines today that if they became more general in systems, they would make systems better. And so it's literally the allowing that
learning
diffusion,
from each other,
learning from each other, and building. It's kind of unique because I can't think of another discipline that's had to take on a job like this to solve that problem.
We have two more slides. Architecture. How can we predict what the emergent behavior might be for that architecture? Can this common language help with better emergence prediction?
Maybe even define what you mean by prediction. Because in predicting stochastics and emergence, my experience has been the big issue is what the stakeholder views as what's prediction. Language may help us define a better extensible version of what prediction is.
Okay. Now, last slide, kind of just some, they weren't fleshed out, so actually just kind of miscellaneous requirements, stakeholder desires, this question of pathology, what does that come in? How do we know whether the system itself is healthy? Okay, so that's our end. So do we want to project from here, or somebody wants the projector
cord? Just have to be a stick.
Yeah, put it on James's machine, and then he can download it to the wiki when you're done.
Right.
Yeah, and for you, download the wiki, whatever it's like, whatever we do for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
We.
Oh, did you want to? Let me just get rid of all this.
It's on the highest level of it. And it's the A. That one of the suffix A, that's the latest one. Yeah.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, well, yeah, next thing. That was us. Yes, we started off with a few questions, had some discussions, and one of the things actually was how do we communicate and some common language, all that. And we said, well, we have problems in communication. And very soon we said, well, the words are not what we want. We should actually first of all look at the concepts. And there was the question, yes, are there many concepts or few, and we agreed more or less. It would be a handful of basic concepts which we find everywhere. And how we look at that, and suddenly the question comes, what's the world view of the people doing the systems engineering? And so we then really concentrated on this worldview issue and asked, what really do we mean by it? What does it mean? So first of all, we believe that the definition of a system is governed by the view of the person. That's what we want to listen to. So it says the person on the other side, which actually should define the worldview we sort of use to talk to this person or to listen to it. So the question immediately was, what is a worldview? That was the initial question that, and how can we characterize it? And we understood there are distinctions between the disciplines with respect to the worldview, and we come up a little bit more to the next point. Yeah. Then we just wondered what makes the worldview, what are the dimensions, leave out the vector for the time being. We believe that after some discussion, there's not just a single worldview for a person, but rather we believe that it has several dimensions, not too many, but some. The comparison which I brought in is not really worldview, but there are at least two ways of looking at cultural differences, which are a kind of worldview in a non-technical sense, at least. One is Hofstede, Trump and Austin work on the same data. And what they have is each of them managed to boil it down to how different cultures behave to very few dimensions. If you look at them, they are not the same. Some of them are overlapping, and I will not go through all of them. One of the ones I explained there was this power distance. It's the question, how much of a difference is in a nation or a culture difference between those who are in power and those which are not? And that's very much different over the world. In some countries or areas, it's rather low, which means that the Americans were willing to bring a president before a trial for not behaving properly. In other countries, that would be impossible. So, and everybody agrees that that's the world how they want to look at it. So you have different sort of levels of strength on this one dimensions. Then we have actually, you see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 dimensions there. Typically, another one is uncertainty avoidance. How much uncertainty willing people to take or not to take. And what both of them, there's another one here, is these dimensions are more or less, well, I wouldn't say orthogonal, but as we said, when isolatable. So which means you can talk about one of them without really talking much about the other. And that was the idea we want to have for the worldview. Some of them might come in, some of them not. We didn't really follow up what it was we went on there. It has consequences, obviously, on the religion, the culture, the profession, the education, the science, and the goals. And what we believe, actually, that we have a vector of these properties and several dimensions, and now we can compare worldviews on this vector of 5, 6, 7, perhaps a little bit more, but not many more dimensions. Next one. So, well, what we didn't really sort out is how do we get a worldview as humans? Obvious, one of these ways of being born, your environment, your education, and sometimes you change your worldview, but that's very rare and with lots of sort of troubles to do. So, and what we think is we use the vector to articulate our concepts and translate it into different area that was coming up already there. Can we now, using this vector, to translate between different disciplines what we got? And we have to understand what the other person's worldview basically is. And as a concept, where we have different, well, lexica or something like that, sets of words, but these worldview would help us to correlate between them. And we already heard that that system science has, probably as the first discipline, the need to translate worldviews within different areas, views, culture, differences, and all that. And that's, we will talk quite a bit about it. Next point. Well, and now the question comes, what's the language we should talk about it? And there we more or less agree that words are at least problematic about it, because too much meaning is intuitively attached to them, and lots of semantics which we sometimes don't want really. So we felt that using paradigms and symbols is a much better way. Question again, which ones are we supposed to use? And what we observed that for some of the things we have quite a small set of symbols, typically the number of different boxes and symbols engineers use is rather limiting. So we said that might be something, but, and I put in perhaps we have to have more symbols for relationships. We don't know that. So what we want is diagrammatic tools and representation, because it's probably a little bit better than words. And one of the sub-examples was brands also. It's one symbol, it means quite a lot to you. And we believe there's only a few forms to be used there. And that's the question for relationships. And I think we have one more four left. No, we don't have it. Yeah, so that's the end of that was. So in some sense, I'm looking at my partners there, it was not really conclusive, but I think with this worldview issue, we brought it to a very, very basic question, which might get us rid of some of the things. And what we believe that's sort of implicit, we will not have one common language. That's sort of some implicit thing, but we have a chance to translate and help to work and talk to people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else from the group to add?
Well, and I think that can be translated into what David his form is that one of the key things we're talking about is that system science, the question has to answer, is really advancing of diagrammatics. And being able to translate across worldview diagrammatics and do some of the heavy lifting of that, because there just doesn't seem to be any other science that's needed according to this group, and there's no other science that we think would answer that question. So that's one of the key things beyond the traditional language question is, you know, the language of diagrams. And coming out of MBSC and sharing time today and that, my God, the translation of diagrams, even though we process diagrams much faster than we process words, they also are so flexible that at the point that if you don't get, if you don't really develop the best of the best, you don't develop a good library of languages, they propagate out into the almost, you know, self-fulfilling, you know, dead ends, which we have many of in systems engineering.
So you're thinking the language is limited to human languages? How humans do in the practice communicate with each other, or?
Well, without a sort of natural language or sort of some languages based on words, because we know from computer science, a diagram is also a language consisting of sort of nouns and words, but that's a different, we sort of the, well, quote unquote, natural languages. This we're saying, this we discount it to something, be not the best way to handle it.
Okay.
I think in our discussion of worldviews, I think most of it was centered around human language, but then somebody mentioned paradigms, and I think we didn't take it there, but that could then get into machine languages and things like that, software languages.
I think another question in David's form, what system science would have to answer, would have also come out of that, is a really, truly a scientific survey of what people see system science as. Mm. From the view, the worldview of the other people in David's chart across the, essentially the Aristotelian transition, across those different, what a scientific study, that would be a great question to answer, of what people see system science as and their view of it from their perspective.
Which people are you thinking?
The people we talked about, the people who would actually be the beneficiaries of system science beyond the system scientists. So the discipline, the people within the individual domain discipline, the actual management people, the actual tacit experts, all of those different groups. And to ask them, from their worldview, well, right now, as a starting point, what's your view of system science?
Do you think that most of them would have an answer? That's what I'm wondering.
I think that's part of the science.
I don't know if even the three of us have a definition of what system science is.
But, their answer may be, I don't have an answer, but I'll tell you what I think systems are. Mm-hmm. You might go that far, and in some cases, you would ask them questions like, okay, is there a science to that, or is that just something that's just a so-called inductive art, an inductive practice? There is no science, it's just inductive.
Just observations.
It's observations and practice. But it would still give you something.
What's that?
Sorry, Jim Miller would say it would have to be something a gram centimeter.
Mm-hmm.
It would have to be measurable.
Right.
But I mean, I have to agree, I don't think you'd get everyone in the one giving you a constitutive answer, but I think the fact that you would get some good answers, and they would show you from their point of view what they think system science needs to do, I think is not a bad place for an integrative science like this to.
Right.
Yeah, and I think maybe the main point is that the question's going to come up, and you need to have some sort of answer.
So by paradigm, are you saying that you might communicate by paradigm as opposed to symbols?
Yes, somewhat.
Yes. Well, I think that, there's, I presented one when we had the discussion from my book, but there's others that if I look at stocks and flows, that's a paradigm, and I can communicate quite a bit about relationships and understanding by looking at examples of using that paradigm in various contexts,
or
links, loops, and archetypes, things like this. Right?
Yeah, H.G. Odom's paradigm was energy and emergy and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I think it's at that level that we can get commonality and understanding.
So what you just described is what 42010 calls viewpoints.
Exactly.
In terms of stakeholder concerns, like
exactly,
is it a component connector way of viewing things?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I think that I think personally that is more fruitful. In fact, that's what I wrote by
paradigms.
I'm sorry.
So this paradigm is equivalent to what we meant by viewpoint.
To a certain extent, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the models that we develop based around paradigms. That
an object oriented has another paradigm,
yeah,
like structural analysis,
yeah,
and service oriented has yet another paradigm. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And Mike
Jackson's
systems methodologies that you mentioned in your handbook
right.
Section, we we skipped over that. This is very interesting that, that our two approaches ended up being sort of orthogonal, which is good.
So I take that
American and European.
So I take the I take the paradigm thing to mean that,
for that
within different paradigms you might have different aspects of the language that are relevant. Like component connectors are only relevant in that paradigm.
But the advantage of them, they're usually explainable in different worldviews using the same paradigm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's the key point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They allow us to go across worldviews, across disciplines. Mm-hmm. I've proved that actually in my courses. I've had nurses, I've had law enforcement people, I've had other types of people who really study and understand the same paradigms and then apply them in their work.
Well, I see a lot of cross-paradigm language issues, like if you have part of your software is using the OO technique, another part is using the structure technique, having those two groups of programmers talk to each other, they just can't, mm-hmm. because they're trying to cross the paradigm boundaries.
Okay.
And those guys talk classes and objects, right. and those guys talk about, you know, if-then statements and case state, you know, so different paradigms and
sure.
the language.
But you're not going far enough up to allow the paradigms to cross, right? Mm-hmm. You're too far down below.
But if you go up,
the abstraction.
If you go up, then
even
neither one of them understands it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the practice.
It's very possible to have paradigms that are immiscible.
Yeah,
and some can be, so right. some can be translated,
so
some can be combined, and some cannot be joined
right.
at all.
So maybe, but instead of trying to, maybe there's some middle
there
thing,
has to be a translation.
A middle thing that mm-hmm. is the mediator. Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to still, even though I have a paradigm, you still have to have the context of a set of concepts that you're going to give labels to
yeah.
because you're going to put them into your instance of the paradigm, right?
Yeah.
And in that case, you still have to settle on what those concepts are. And if there are too many concepts, it blows the mind.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If they're the right number, you can get some meaning in that and really use it as a basis for understanding and communication.
So you need to define your abstract level of abstraction
that's
available
I guess
for this interaction between domains.
You got it. Exactly.
So I think I really agree with you that,
yeah,
that
okay.
you know, that
right.
it's useful to have this idea that the worldview is more general,
right,
and maybe
right.
more cultural and linguistic, and you have paradigms, which is a little bit more technical and more specific and better defined.
Yes,
across worldviews.
Across worldviews.
Well, it can, or it can
yeah,
be
sure.
within one.
It
you
can
know,
be within
a
or
there's a hierarchy.
Either way.
Like I say, some of the paradigms will be constructed in such a way that you're just not going to be able to combine them with others. You know, and
well, and I think what it says about that statement up there, just reading directly, mm-hmm. I don't think it was so much which one as you probably have to start with paradigmics.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
And you have to then develop a library of better and better improving
right,
of
right.
diagrammatic techniques
exactly.
because almost none of those paradigms can be explained without decent diagrammatic language.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's the duality between those that you need to work on
exactly.
system science. That's, again, very unique to system
yeah,
science.
Instead of
yeah.
just which
that's
ones to use, which
I
one is appropriate for the case.
Yeah. Well, each paradigm has its own symbology.
Right.
But
yeah.
maybe there's where science
has to go or
yeah.
or
exactly.
or
they
absorb
use the same
or
symbols,
modify.
Concepts.
Yeah, yeah. because in many cases, I could name a number of industries where they've had to take
Yeah.
As the in, because the industries were very integrative, and they had to take and they had to do that job. They had to say, well, our way of thinking about mm-hmm. this from these three aspects of the industry is this, and our diagrammatic, and they eventually integrated. They took the best of breed. They let the genetics of those work together, and they allowed those to evolve together.
Yeah, right.
And that was probably some of the best system and applied science mixed together I've ever seen. But it's not a general form. It's specialized
mm-hmm.
in certain industries, generally based on the pressure of their environment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what it took to be that industry, what it took to have that value, created that environment, and they evolved that. Some industries, there's no general solution here. In other words, nobody's really done the scientific discipline that cuts across all that.
Mm-hmm. If I were to try to generalize it, I would say that worldview is, you know, how we relate to reality, and
mm-hmm.
whereas the paradigm is how we symbolize
That relationship.
That relationship.
And where does mental model fit in?
Yeah.
That's a good statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where does mental model fit in between those two then?
Well, mental model is one type of, you know, the mental model is certainly based around paradigms in our thinking.
Be involved in both.
And building the notion as Senga is about a shared vision is really sharing these paradigms and getting a common understanding of them. And
I gave an example in the group where Ken Wilber is a kind of a sociologist, and he in his book I think A Brief Theory of Everything. He describes four categories of cultural worldviews. And I just found that they surprised because they mapped into my four categories of cause. But he started off by looking at hundreds of cultures, native cultures around the world, and trying to see what is their cosmology, what is their view of reality, their mythology about origins and things like that. And he was looking for what they all had in common. And he just about scrapped the project because it just wasn't there. Until he finally re-looked at it and he said, wait a minute, they sort into these four quadrants. And then he has this quadrant diagram that's very much like the four cause diagram. But see, that's pretty general. You know, how useful is it to categorize things just in four quadrants? But at least it's a start. And if you know that one culture is oriented toward very materialistic, well, you communicate in that way.
But your common language could be forced to take that into account in terms of whatever domains it's trying to address. It's like, no, you can't, if you want to use it here, you need to modify it accordingly. Like you said, when they don't mix, therefore maybe they're in different quadrants.
So if you have all these different cultures sorted into four categories, I'm sure when you look at them individually, they're all going to have different symbology.
No, we run into the same issue.
So there you go. So now they all have different paradigms, but they're basically within a similar worldview.
And we run into the same thing if we took domains, looked at all the domains, because you were mentioning that. Should we go down below, look at all the domains, and take what we want? But perhaps we'll run into that situation.
We're definitely going to run into
categorize.
Yeah, we're going to run into what Mike Jackson and those people found with their system of systems methodologies, where they did a good enough partition into functionalist, interpretivist, emancipatory, and postmodern. That's a very useful and very relevant, because it's systems practice oriented, so that's a very...
And it came out of actually taking into account these systems having different domains.
Different, looking at different methodologies and classifying them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really good.
Methodologies disagree.
That's right.
Right.
There's a lot of fighting about.
Yeah, but I mean, but part of this science I see in the future is saying just because they disagree now doesn't mean they're right.
No.
It's like saying all of evolution has always been right. No, many times they're wrong.
Exactly.
As we've built, this better science, it's basically said, great.
That's true.
Okay, we found out now. They disagree. In fact, they actually fight against each other.
Yeah.
In many cases,
right.
Maybe that's right. Maybe that's absolutely wrong. And the next scientific piece of knowledge has to be: this would be a better integrative approach if you go on from the fundamentals of systems.
It's not like we've chucked off. We haven't chucked off things that didn't work before.
We have.
And so, that didn't work.
One thing that also
we were looking at those failed attendance.
And we talked about how we just want something that's good enough to run with, and I think that work is good enough to run with, and it's evolvable. People can correct it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But another thing that occurred to me is Jack mentioned John Soa has not really gotten enthusiastic about this. He's been trying for years to get somebody to use his conceptual graphs representation scheme, which is based on Peirce's conceptual structures, and that might be something to consider. For one thing, he'd get very excited about it. But it also is a more flexible. It includes agent and the agency role and the patiency role in the logical representation, and then it maps to other common logic interchange format, so you can get right into the tool development. So it's sort of an intermediary between the human view and the tool view. So it's Peirce-oriented SOA and a flexible representation scheme.
I think one of the key skills of a good system engineer is the ability to do paradigm shifts.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Just so they can talk to different people.
Right. That's why, you know, one architecture, you slice it up seven different ways, you know, depending on what you're looking at.
Well, that's the interesting cross section with, as you're saying, here's James, also with the viewpoint perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We have to deal with several paradigms,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and we have to understand them in order to condense that information and use it in a constructive manner in
yeah.
architects and systems.
So it prevents us from spinning our wheels trying to find one viewpoint, you know,
exactly.
one common thing when. It's obvious we need to look at different
right.
viewpoints.
I remember, yeah, Stuart Arnold presented a paper many years ago. A lot of people are worried about, well, what more do I need to add to the system definition to be more correct?
Well,
and he said,
yeah.
well, what do I need to take away to be more correct?
Right.
Yeah. So he introduced the
mm-hmm.
the opposite of addition is elision,
yeah.
lighting, E-L-I-D-I-N-G.
Mm-hmm.
So you gotta, and that's the trick is, what are the, you know, as Mark Mayer says, what are the enduring properties?
Mm-hmm.
An architecture should be only that which is enduring, and anything else is design.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because the architecture ought to transcend design iterations as you try to introduce new ways of doing things,
right.
new technologies, you know, new
instantiations. Most industries, I think, when you say, if you look at the industrial view right now, you say architectures are multi-generational. You know, the designs aren't necessarily, but architectures are.
Well, that the architectures that are multi-generational have more value than those that are just die.
That'd be another way.
Die when the design's done,
right?
Because then what's the point? Architectures
exactly.
are supposed to carry you through,
right.
for a longer time. And often that's accidental, because as they evolve the design, the architectures that are not robust tend to peter out. And you can no longer evolve it, and that design family goes away. So
it seems to me like common language is very similar to cooperation, you know, in the sense that it tends to be project and community specific.
Right. That's. I think that's a lesson of
yeah.
studies in that when they've done science on trans-multi-interdisciplinary.
Mm-hmm.
Efforts and in academic settings, there will be a lot of enthusiasm for some new interdisciplinary program.
Mm-hmm.
And they've looked at the success of these things, and it's usually when they have a concrete goal
yeah.
to work toward, then rather than just, you know, it'll be great if we talk.
Right,
you know,
yeah. So
I mean,
communities tend to do that, and,
right.
and projects, especially funded projects, tend to do that.
Right.
So I mean, one way of doing that is to look
I
at.
I sent you a good example of
as,
that.
As part of setting
plenty.
A goal-based science, say what are the big as part of the system science? What are the big system problems to solve? You want some concrete goals that have some reach to them. As part of the science, what are the big problems? And don't be shy.
Right. So David, can you kind of help us wrap this up?
So
can I add something there?
Yeah.
Some they published something like that that said big 10 challenges for the next 10 years. We could do something like for systems engineer.
I've always wondered about that because I ever thought of a discipline that would be setting that, you know, like the lead one before all the other guys got theirs out.
Yeah.
We'd be I always thought to myself, it would be the big systems engineering organizations
yeah.
that would be doing that.
Yeah.
The other guys would look at us and go,
oh yeah, that's it.
Oh yeah, I'm kind of underneath that someplace. So, you know,
okay.
I've always
like
wondered
it.
That.
No, I'm not a big fan of the grand challenges.
No.
Well, I am. So
I think just you know the communicating, finding even you know diagrammatic tools for improving communication is a grand challenge. It seems very low level, but it's a really big problem. Yeah, I don't know when people tend to say you know world hunger, you know then it, I think you know, that doesn't really. We want something to be very specific and focused, and then I think because I'm afraid people roll their eyes if you get too grand.
I think I'm going to be straight with you guys. Grandness isn't a matter of how well you sit down and put on your thinking cap and decide what are the important things to work on. And those help to many times drive which one of those very easily can be broken into. Well, that means that these are probably the paradigmics, the main symbols, diagrammatic languages. But I'm just speaking for the fact that also much of the problems we haven't solved is because we keep saying we're not going to solve world hunger, and guess what? We don't. So, you know, I'm thinking of this challenge at the CMOS and sitting at those meetings in the 1980s when people were looking at discrete logic. None of this shit existed. And they sat there and they said, you know, you guys on the other side of the room at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, what a bunch of dreamers. What a bunch of wild scientists. You think you're going to integrate that kind of, you know, these boards that were this big into something like this? You guys, you're absolutely off the wall. You know, you're trying to boil the ocean. I remember that quote. And a different point of view said, no, it's just one of the key problems that if we want any of this logic to go anyplace, you're going to have to, you know, do it. I don't want to call it grand challenge. It was just a bunch of guys who were part system guys and part components guys getting together and deciding on one of those things. And that drove so much of the best systems engineering in the world, I can't even tell you. But it wasn't system science that we're talking about. It was one of the challenges that happened to be one of the great challenges of all time that people took on. So I could name a few more. There's not a million of them. I'm not saying there's a million. There's a few of them. But I remember the talk of, well, that's boiling the ocean. Oh, that's shit. It depends on what you determine. What ocean are you talking about boiling? Mm-hmm. You know?
But developing a common language for systems praxis, I think, is a grand challenge.
It is. I agree. I'm not saying it's not grand. It's not big. It is a big one. But I mean,
or at least give me a lexicon that will allow me to translate.
Yeah, chop it down into a smaller.
If we can at least start to come to an agreement on how the concepts are thought of, we can later come up with, you know, coming up with a way to express them in the same language. If I know that you and I are talking about a brick when you say whatever widget.
You're assuming that there's a brick there that doesn't have an ambiguous leg.
I'm assuming that there's a thing.
Right.
And the question is both, can you and I agree on the thing, even though we're talking about, even though we may use different languages, do we both see it in the same way?
Right, but that's a paradigm that you have right there that says that there is a thing, we're using different terminology, but we're, you know, maybe from our perspectives.
If we can't agree on that paradigm, then there's no point in any of this. Because
no, that's not true, because you can generate the, anyway, because there are other paradigms that are functional paradigms that don't make that assumption. It's just, I'm just saying that that's a paradigmatic assumption, and so it's really important, and it's great that that's brought
within
out.
Within that paradigm, what language is useful? With another paradigm, what language is useful?
But useful for what and where? I mean, I'm sitting here, and it's like, if I think back over all my experience with the government, everything I've encountered, I have a gut feeling that it's just a waste of time to be trying to find a common language, because we did it so many times in the data center. We have a saying in the data world, you know, we love standards because there's so many to choose from. and I made the comment in our group, I said, okay, the definition of a word that's really important is the one that's used by the person you want to listen to. Mm-hmm. And if we're not listening, I don't care what definition we have, you know. It's just context specific, you know. And it's, I think it's going to be project and community specific. You go into a situation, you're going to redesign the transportation network of the city. You've got to go out there and do the research and find out how people think and what terms they're using and translate it into their terms.
Well, that's why our first question is, why would you want a common language? And if it turns out the answer is no, then we stop there.
Oh,
we learned something.
I think you want common understanding.
Yeah.
That's
we had that discussion. That was one.
Yeah. And to get that, you're going to have to bridge over lots of different languages. Right. And any linguist will tell you that language, if you want a common language, it has to be a dead one. You have to use Latin.
That's why we do
Latin. Latin, because languages are evolving all the time.
There's aspects of understanding in every layer, not just up here. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the beauty of the language that they're talking about there is that that's a different animal in a lot of ways, in the way it was described, at least when I was in the group, is that it's about extensibility. It's about the fact that the only thing common about it
is it is the best of the best framework for being able to make the understanding common. The framework for making the understanding common, and it's moving. And the truth is, again, we have examples in some industries, in some areas, where they've kind of thought of language as this living beast that is really, it's a translation between, you know, representation and meaning.
Yeah.
And it because it is that, it's just, you know, it's moving along. And so when you say common, I think what you're saying is there's some grand, unalterable thing in something as complex as a world of systems that's just going to be this unalterable, you know, the Rosetta Stone. You know, it's carved in stone, it's this there. This is the translation of everything. It's really not that concept that we had here, I don't think. It's this different defining it in this way. And what a lot of it is collecting the best of the best initially. I'm being very simplistic in translating.
Okay, so wrap us up.
Okay. So I want to make the comment that I think that this project actually may epitomize why systems engineers and systems scientists should be working together. One of the things in the ISSS, so we had a lot of people come into the ISSS and they ask, well, what is the purpose of the ISSS or what's the goals? It's really an ecology of knowledge. And so if we go back to the founding of the Society for General Systems Research, we had, you know, 5-6 people that got together at the American Association for the Advancement of Science meetings and decided we needed a society. But at that point, it already was built on diversity and different views, and that has maintained. But moving forward, John had made this point that in the engineering context, you're much more focused. Now, one of the things that it's interesting in this conversation and between the two teams is I actually do feel like there is an American split, because having been in this side, we were discussing pragmatism and we were discussing Peirce. But actually, some of the references I discussed before were like Bourdieu, you know, Heidegger, you know. So we have the continental view. So it should be interesting when you meet in Austria and you bring the two groups together, because I think it's going to resurface a lot of those sorts of distinctions and the ways about seeing the world.
Come to India, we'll really mix it up.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Could bring a few Chinese into the. So James, I think that we can declare success for this session, and we have artifacts and we can move forward.
Good.
Very good. Let me talk a little bit about tomorrow. We've got Jack on schedule for about 9 o'clock. He plans on going through a presentation which will include those 5 concept maps that he had put out. That's going to take us about an hour or something like that.
Is he going to be here in person or over the phone?
Over the phone. And I've got the PowerPoints, and I'll do that part of it, and he'll do the talking. And if I can get James to create a new session for tomorrow, we can figure out how to actually get it recorded, so we'll have his words and his PowerPoints together at the same time. The other thing I'd like to do, if we can get this together, is we're going to print those PowerPoints for you to use and make notes on while he's talking. And then I'm going to collect those PowerPoints, and I'll show you a little bit about what we're going to do with those PowerPoints in terms of taking those concept maps and expanding them and putting alternatives in and giving us something more to look at and giving Jack something more to look at as he's going along. Then we will break for lunch. We figure that'll probably take us most of the morning. Then we'll break for lunch. Bud's going to do some CBOC stuff that they've been working on with.
Two things. One is some paradigms, some models that describe the structure of the part two, which is about systems, and the other is the work that we're working in a more global sense over the entire CBOC with Sandy on Spiesenthal with some representation. But I think both of them can be interesting. And also get some feedback. So I'll pass along.
Start at 8 or 9 tomorrow.
9
when Jack is on schedule for 9. That's 7 o'clock in El Paso, which is where he is at tomorrow.
But we want to start. Maybe we want to start with his stuff before 9, because you want to cover your stuff, right?
Can you do it in an hour?
Sure.
So why don't we start at 8, cover Bud stuff, and then we'll at 9 we'll switch to Jack stuff, and then you've got the rest of the day.
Then I've got the afternoon. And mostly in the afternoon, what I'm going to talk about are different approaches to the issues of ontologies and taxonomies, and a lot of examples I'm going to show you. And we're going to talk about the pitfalls of trying to do some of that work and the kind of difficulties you run into that we're going to have to figure out how to work through as we move forward.
Okay. If I can get so a chart of date, I'll see if also Rick can come.
Yeah, because try to get Rick to come.
Yeah,
and if he's the author of that chapter on system science overview.
Right. So I can do it. There's no problem.
He's also the owner of part two.
Right. Exactly.
Are you going to talk about this work group was asked to review all of part two?
Well, yeah. Then there's a new description of a part of part two called the system approach, which is going to be a modified version going into the 0.75 version of the SCBOC project. Well, we certainly want comments. I'm not happy with the text in there myself.
But that's still one article. Our ECOSI leadership has asked this working group to review all of part two.
Yeah, they should do. But the only thing that's changing from the 0.5 version to the 0.75 version is the addition of a new system approach.
Well, we're supposed to review the whole thing.
Yeah, but you should review the whole
thing. Not limit to the
Absolutely.
New stuff.
And I think they should take it in that way. And particularly this overview of system science, which I was mentioning earlier. So.
Okay, so anything else, Rich, for tomorrow?
No.
Okay, so last
8 o'clock.
Wait, 8 o'clock. So what's in the afternoon?
I'm going to go over all these other various approaches that have been used and some difficulties looking at WordNet stuff, looking at some of the Dulce stuff.
That's a good idea.
Looking at the five definitions of behavior that we're going to formally define using Dulce, going all the way down to the mathematical representation of those concepts. So we're going to go top to bottom.
And are we having dinner tonight?
Yeah, that's the last note of business is who wants to go somewhere for dinner?
That sounds like a good plan. I have to eat someplace.
So who has a car?
Huh?
Well, I have a car that'll hold five.
Well, we were thinking about going to see Gordon Lightfoot playing up here.
So where is it?
Gordon Lightfoot is playing the Florida Theater.
It's up the street.
Yeah, it's like two blocks.
The
tickets are on the order of $40, which is about half of what they are in Toronto. And they had like in second row of the balcony and some on the floor. Like in Toronto, he sells out a whole week, like a month in advance. So it's like, it's just like, okay.
Is that a dinner thing?
No.
It's 5:30. Let's just meet down the lobby at 6. Those who want to go somewhere for dinner, and we'll figure out whether we walk or drive. Or whatever.
Yeah.
Where is he playing?
Some of the nicer places are across the river.
The ticket office should be open now. So Ticketmaster actually closed out.
Across the river is easy.
The concert starts at 8?
Concert starts at 8, yeah.
Oh. So does that mean those going to the concert won't join us for dinner?
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
So those who want to go to dinner, come down in half an hour at 6.
At the lobby.
And in the lobby.
Okay.
Let's make it a little bit later because it might take us a little bit to get this
6:15.
Session.
6:15.
Okay.
6:15 sounds better.
Compromise.